Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political right co-host Senator Dan McKay.
Hey, everybody.
And on the political left, the chairman for the Alliance for a Better Utah, Josh Kanter.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Hi, Josh. Always nice to have you. Washington, D.C., what are you guys seeing going on in there? I mean, we got the impeachment vote happening.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about, like, reduction of regulation and the fact the economy's still ticking along at record paces. I mean, I thought you were talking about those things. You want to talk about impeachment? Okay, fine.
It's such a dumpster fire.
Seems
Dan
like a distraction, but okay.
It's such a dumpster fire. I was on a panel today that dealt with housing affordability, a really important issue nationwide in our state. And you can think of it, you know, just think of it as income or housing for low-income Utahns, just because there's different definitions. I was thinking how wonderful it'd be if in Congress they were dealing with, you know, vouchers for housing that could help be a lifeline to so many people in need, and instead we're doing what we're doing.
Yes, we are. There's so many things that Congress could be doing, and if the Senate and the House would agree on anything, that'd be great.
How do you think this plays out, Josh?
I think it's going to be interesting. I mean, I think obviously public opinion is shifting the more information that comes out. I think, you know, McAdams and Romney are probably a lot closer to where the American public seems to be, and that this needs a full airing in public. And the people who are really rushing to Trump's defense on the impeachment stuff and really criticizing it, I think are doing a lot of damage to our democracy, including some of our congressmen, certainly Congressman Stewart. Whether it comes to a conviction or not, I think is really, frankly, irrelevant to whether the process ought to be played out.
Dan, don't you find it interesting, this combination of McAdams and Romney? I think McAdams is the winner in that.
I was going to say, if Romney does nothing but to help, you know, Ben be reelected, then I guess, you know, I guess that's Mitt's MO. But I would just say,
because he's a secret Democratic operative. Is that why you're saying that?
It's Russian, really. everybody's Russian, you know, that's the way it is. No, I'll just say, you know, the impeachment, you know, they say, well, you know, Trump is bad for the democracy or this is bad for the democracy. It's like, my goodness. First of all, we're a republic. Okay, so let's deal with that issue. But the fact is, that being said, I'm going to get outside of my little definition Nazi, and I'm going to say, I'll tell you what's bad for the nation. If you look at impeachment and how it divided the country with Bill Clinton, that was not a positive process. It was not positive. I think Republicans, and when you listen to those who were present in the House at the time and voted for it, look back with regret on having impeached President Clinton based on the way it went down. That said, I think now the Democrats, it'll be their turn to learn the lesson. They will find somehow, they'll scrape together the votes, they'll pressure enough, and I predict they will pressure themselves into an impeachment, making it certain that Donald Trump, and then they will come up with a train wreck of a nominee for president, and you will see an impeached president for the first time re-elected. Andrew Johnson was the first president to be elected or to be impeached and be up for re-election, and he didn't win his party's nomination. Donald Trump, I think, based on
history,
the current path, will be re-elected.
Yeah, that's tough. You know, I don't know what to say from the political middle, except that I think that there is an absolute argument for impeachment. Yeah. I'm not thinking of it politically, but just thinking about what the president has done. And if I were to have my greatest hope, it would be that there would be an intra-party challenge to the president, that somebody would step up and say, we can have less regulation, we can have, you know, no trade war, we can have a better policies that are conservative and that not be Donald Trump.
And I'm not going to argue differently, because I think that there is a call in the Republican Party for a group of people who feel that way, right? We offered that candidate to the country in 2012, right? And the country said, we're sorry, you know, we don't want someone civil. We want somebody who is,
draining
Donald
the swamp.
Trump.
And, crazy. Hey, Fed reduces interest rates again. We don't like to spend a lot of time talking economic news,
I wanted to talk to you about this.
Well, they only do that if they're seeing things that are concerning them.
Yeah.
And, both are businessmen in a way.
Negative interest rates, right? I mean, that's my question for you, Natalie, is where's the floor on an interest rate reduction when interest rates are already at a record low? I mean, most people are seeing cash falling out of cars driving down the road.
You know, the interesting thing in the economy right now is normally when you have a slowdown, a recession, it's caused in the business cycle. It's overbuilding. It's, you know, bad loans, some sort of imbalance that requires a correction. Right now, we don't have those imbalances in the private side. But on the public side, we have all these risky things that are bad for the economy, whether it's the trade war or geopolitical things like, you know, Brexit or Hong Kong or Middle East. It's almost like outside.
Well, and the continuation of skyrocketing deficits and and national debt at a time when
public
policy decisions.
Yeah, but it remains to be seen if it will be a factor in the presidential election. You know, if it will slow down to the point where it actually impacts something. Let's turn to local news. What are you guys seeing right now? In you know, 1 week to go before the mayoral race in Salt Lake City.
Wow. I don't know. I mean, Josh, it's probably harder for you than it is for me. I mean, I look at Aaron Mendenhall and I look at Luz Robles, and this is the race I think everyone thought it was going to be. One, it's hard fought, and everybody is in the trenches, and there's a lot of people involved.
And quite substantive.
It's very substantive.
Yeah, not superficial, not mean-spirited, but you know, the real marketplace of ideas playing out from two very qualified women.
Do you see, Natalie and Josh, do you see, so a report on donations just came out this last week and talked about how Aaron Mendenhall was raising more cash, but Luz had more contributors, small dollar contributors, right? How do you feel, I mean, when you look at that, how does that affect your thought on how the race comes down?
Boy, I'm not sure. I mean, I really have a hard time believing that at this late stage that fundraising in this race, I mean, this has been, you know, from the gang of what, 10, 12, whatever the word is, start. I mean, people have been watching this race for so long. People know Luz. They know Aaron. I have a hard time believing money is really what separates the two at this point within Salt Lake City. So I personally don't read a lot into it and would echo, Natalie, your comment. I mean, I think it's really... it's a fabulous race. I mean, the idea that there's really a marketplace of ideas going on, that it's polite, it's nice. You know, these two women are being really kind to each other and letting the voters see who they are. And I think it's hard to imagine the city going wrong with, I mean, I have my personal preferences and everything else, just like everybody, but I think it's hard to imagine either of these candidates not being a great outcome for the city.
My understanding is that you know, typically voter turnout is higher on the east side of I-15 than on the west side of I-15.
Interesting.
And
which doesn't help Luz.
It doesn't help Luz, but because she's definitely a west side of I-15 candidate, maybe it will make that turnout happen, and it could defy, you know, some of the polling that we're seeing.
Yeah.
And I think that's the hope from the Escamilla camp, is that they get great voter turnout from the west side. And if she pulls that off, she could get an upset. Right now, it looks like it would be an upset for her to win. Am I reading that right? I mean, two pretty significant polls that both had some big margins for Aaron Mendenhall.
Yeah, but it to your point, they're polling likely voters, right? And if you've got new voters, or you've got people who don't participate frequently, so a likely voter is somebody who votes usually in two of the last three elections, right? And so if you can combine those, you've got a midterm plus a presidential, that person's likely to vote in another midterm.
Yeah.
And when you take that type of classification, if you've got somebody who hasn't voted in either one in a while, but they're charged by a new candidate, that's interesting.
Yeah. Dan, from a legislator's perspective, do you see either candidate as being a stronger liaison with the state legislature?
Oh, man, they are both so skilled in this department, I think.
One's one of your own.
Yeah,
one is sitting senator.
Senator Escamilla, and she is, I will tell you, anytime I need help understanding the other side's perspective on a bill, she's great. I mean, right. And she's able to point out a weakness that I hadn't noticed, hadn't thought of, and is able to help me change the policy for better, right? So she's phenomenal that way.
Saying a lot. I love our listeners to hear that.
Yeah, and Aaron, on the other hand, right, when it was time for the city to recognize that there a deal needed to be made, like, you know, with the legislature on important issues facing the state, Aaron has been the one that stepped up and said, okay, I'll be the adult in the room. And that is not an easy position to be in, and then have everybody, you know, pointing one direction or another on who ought to be elected. I I honestly have immense respect for the way both candidates have run the race. And man, we need more like this.
I have an interesting angle on that, but I want to hear from you, Josh. But as I turn it over, my angle is this. I think it's actually better for Senator Escamilla to stay in the legislature and be there for the West Side and be there for this. I mean, she's very skilled legislatively. So there's an argument to be made that the best scenario for Salt Lake City and the legislature is keep them both.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. I think, obviously, Senator Escamilla has been great in the Senate, and I think as a Democrat, people really love having her there. I also think on this polling issue, issue, I think it's going to be interesting because I think there are a lot of people who probably go back and forth just about every day on what to do with these two candidates for a whole variety of reasons, both policy-driven.
Isn't that a nice thought?
And it is a nice thought.
That good?
But I also think that that means that when people go into the voting box, notwithstanding the turnout issue that you're talking about, East Side versus West Side, that people may not be voting for who they answered on that phone call.
Yeah, there you go. Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. I'm with Dan McKay and Josh Cantor. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Dan McKay on the right.
Josh Cantor on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. We ended the first segment just talking about the Salt Lake City mayor's race. I just wanted to ask both of you, how much confidence are you putting in the polling? Just because I have a feeling there.
Well, we saw what polling did in 2016. It worked really, really well.
It was awful,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then look what happened even locally in the mayoral race. You know, Jim DeBacchus was doing
way
so
ahead.
Well.
And then didn't win. And didn't even get
well, but
place.
Jim, in fairness, in the polling, it seems to me started in one place and stayed in that place, right? I mean, he didn't. The polls weren't necessarily wrong. It just was that he never moved.
Mm-hmm. You know, I work in an institute where we do a bit of survey research, but it has gotten so much more difficult to get a random sample, and we used to be so landline dependent, and they had it down. And now most polls are a blend of emails and cell phones and the like, even mail out, mail back kind of things. And
so we're seeing larger
errors. Yeah.
Yeah, larger
because you
error.
Have to get a random sample for the central limit theorem to hold.
Yeah.
So, hey.
Central limit theorem.
I'm sorry.
That was awesome.
Hey,
break out your text.
She wanted to throw that one in there.
I didn't. Mm-hmm. It's just that's how I remember things. Salt Lake Tribune made the announcement this week through a column of George Pyle, sometimes on this show, that they were going to stop endorsing political candidates. And there was a long period where they did not endorse candidates. And I remember when they started, it was when Dean Singleton took over the ownership of the Tribune. He'd owned the Denver Post and the Park Record, and then he took over the Tribune, and he brought that here. And I just remember thinking, wow, that's going to be different for this community, because we just didn't have that. And then they go on and start endorsing, and I remember they endorsed George W. Bush in his second term. They had, Josh, you mentioned that they endorsed Mia Love.
Yep.
And so it hasn't been without controversy, but they're going to stop.
Does this mean they're going to stop taking cheap shots at candidates as well? Because George Pyle, literally an article before this one, if you look at his history on the website, he takes this like completely unwarranted swipe at Greg Hughes.
Lit him up. Yeah.
And well, that's okay. Well, Greg's wife lit George back up on her.
Yeah,
reply.
But see, you would expect Krista's response, right? Like, I get it. She's a stand-by-your-mind kind of girl, right? And it's one of the reasons I love that lady. But I will tell you, like, George Pyle taking swipes at candidates, if he takes a swipe at 9 out of 10 candidates, is that just an endorsement without an endorsement?
Yeah. You know, the thing is, one is his column. So he's speaking his voice. But when they do a House editorial, that is speaking on behalf of the paper, and that pulls in the publisher, and, you know, it's a bigger deal.
The byline's name says, by George Pyle, both times. So don't be George Pyle 1.0
well,
one day
on the
and then
editorials.
2.0 the next.
I mean, the editorials come from the editorial board.
Well, but my point would be, you have the reporting side of the paper and then the opinion side. And the opinion side does whatever they want. It's just sort of voices.
And I would say the reporting side is getting really small.
Yeah, and the independence is supposed to be on the reporting side. And George, even in his column, made the comment that, you know, the reporting site's always picking fights with people and, you know, how do you keep your nonprofit status ever? Mm-hmm. But did you see his clever line about the intentionally nonprofit?
No.
Yeah, that was funny.
That was classic. Did I get it right?
You did.
He basically said the reason they're not endorsing candidates is that they were going to now be, as they call it, intentionally nonprofit because they're not making a profit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's when they announced that they were going to become a nonprofit. I kept saying I thought they already were a nonprofit, so it didn't really matter.
Dan, on the lighting up by George Pyle of Greg Hughes, it was because Greg came out to complain about Ben McAdams, correct?
Yeah.
It was in some rallies and things. But the write-up by Krista Hughes, am I getting her name right?
Yes.
That was a powerfully written piece.
And I'll tell you the interesting element. If people always look at the Greg Hughes and at the Greg Hughes that is the persona of Greg Hughes that
bully,
everybody knows,
right?
And
they, a boxer, you know, whatever.
There's this perception of Greg, and what you have, interestingly, is people don't realize that behind Greg Hughes or with Greg Hughes is an equally yoked, hardworking fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And Krista Hughes, she is not a person to be taken lightly. I'll just say that. Like,
for our listeners, give it a read. It's a really great write-up where she talks about...
Oh, sorry. I should have given you some rundown. But she just talks about why. She's like, look, you can, from all you want, sit in the cheap seats and chirp about how great things are.
As an editorial writer.
Yeah. But step in the arena and do something. You know, run for office. Pick up
and
the
torch. And then she spells out all the accomplishments of Greg Hughes.
She nails them out.
I thought it was a really well-written piece. Josh, you're smiling, but I know what you're thinking didn't write it.
I had more. Oh, no, I wasn't thinking that at all. I assume she wrote it. I had more to say about that when I read it than I can remember right now. I mean, I think calling George as sitting in the cheap seats is a cheap shot. I don't think that's accurate. I mean, I think George is he's a quality journalist and columnist and editorial member of the Salt Lake Tribune. I think he takes his job very seriously, and I think that you know, he does a good job of observing and watching what's going on. And his criticism of Hughes, much of which I personally would share, to me, you know, I get why she came out and did it. I think she came out swinging just like Greg does. And
that's interesting.
And by the way, kudos to the Tribune for printing it, right? I mean, they took it, which is what they should do.
Yeah, so. I think it's great journalism to get these feelings and the conversation out there. This is a little nuanced, but there's the Utah Association of Counties, and that's the professional, you know, association of all of 29 counties in the state. Summit County has come out and basically said, we might pull our membership because we don't like the way we're treated. We're discriminated against for our ideology, whether they're, you know, Democrats, even some gender discrimination. This surprise either of you?
It did surprise. Excuse me. It didn't surprise me too much because I think this has come up before. And Salt Lake County has talked about having to leave the Association of Counties in the past. Summit's had to look at it. You know, this has come up in public lands issues where the Association of Counties has tried to take a really aggressive partisan ideological view about certain things. And to some extent, it seems like they sometimes don't recognize their place as an association of full ideas.
Yeah. Dan, you have some experience with county commissioners in this regard? Or?
Yes. I mean, you know, county commissioners are elected on a partisan basis, right? So are county council people in Salt Lake County. And so it's not really a surprise that it's partisan. And when you look at Salt Lake County is divided 5-4 on the council for 5 Republicans and 4 Democrats currently, right? And you look at, you know, outside of the state, it's less generous for Democratic representation.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have a Democratic council like Summit County who wants to proffer an issue with a largely Republican-controlled, you know, group, it's going to be tough for them to get traction on their issues. I understand getting their desire to get out.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just tell you, UAC does a lot for them at the legislature that they probably – undervalue the UAC's contribution to things, but
I can't imagine how difficult it would be to keep an association of so much diversity with the sentiments of urban county commissioners and rural county commissioners and I don't know, different parts of the state.
Yeah,
but I think it's unfortunate. What about we got to talk about tax reform? And what I'm hearing, this is just from the cheap seats. Josh can join me in the cheap seats since we're not elected officials. But I'm hearing
next to George,
I'm hearing
a popcorn. That's right. Comfortable back there.
I'm guessing I'm hearing a special session on Friday, December 13th.
That is what I'm hearing as well. So it's consistent so on it the has, field as it is in the
so
seat.
So it has some bad karma
on
that
December
it's Friday
13th.
The 13th. Mm-hmm. I'll just jump out from the political middle. I think they should get this done.
Yeah, I'm not at liberty really because I don't know what the final bill is going to be. I will say that the more and more this thing kind of chugs towards December 13th, the more and more I'm hearing colleagues with one concern or another about, you know, one group in, one group out, one group tax their services, one group not. And there's the tax on food, and there's a lot of sensitivity about, you know, whether or not creating a new social program, which is a tax credit for the poor to offset, you know, the gains in the food tax.
I'm smiling at Dan.
There's just this interesting debate.
I don't think of a credit or like a cash payment as a social program. I think it is as you know, an incentive to work or
anytime,
as a subsidy.
Anytime the government is promising a check,
yeah,
you have to stop and wonder. Is it going to be lasting? Is it going to, you know, and
yeah,
what is its
purpose?
It's
just sure different than administering a program where you're dealing with, you know, definitional things of, you know, poverty and food stamps. And
it is now. But you remember, food stamps started out as a very simple program. And now look at it. I mean, there's a level of complexity and compliance and assurance along with, I mean, that goes into the food stamp mm-hmm, program mm-hmm. itself. So I will say, you're right. Right now, it's a simple credit. But let there be something wrong happening, and I tell you what it will be. The funny thing is, a bunch of poor people who are also polygamous will be taking advantage of the program, and someone is going to object and say that shouldn't be. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
I just say that because that's a, you know, that I hear that claim.
Josh, time is yours.
Wow, thank you. Okay, so. So first of all, if anybody remembers, one of my favorite movies, The American President, and Annette Bening gets fired. And when she has to answer to why she was fired, she says, I was fired for, I believe the quote is something like, entirely failing to achieve the goals for which I was hired. And that's what this tax commission should be done. I mean, this is just an atrocity. If there's fraud in the system, as Dan, you were just talking about, let's root out the fraud. Let's figure that out. Or realize that at the margin, there's always going to be fraud in these kinds of systems. But whether or not the reduction of sales tax on food is the right answer. As Natalie, obviously, you are a strong advocate of things like the earned income tax credit.
Yeah.
And I agree with you on that. But putting the tax on food is incredibly regressive. Putting it on fuel is incredibly regressive.
Unless
and giving
it's
people
not.
Like me a tax break by maintaining the income tax system that we have is just an atrocity. And this is, you know, there's the saying of show me your budget, I'll show you your values. And this demonstrates exactly that. And it is an atrocity to the citizens of
Josh,
Utah.
I'll tell you, though, the thing that's interesting about it is they have a dial. They can adjust it so that it doesn't have this regressivity that you speak of. If they want to do it, the credits and the way it's designed, they can just turn that dial and change the way it affects different socioeconomic you know, cohorts.
Yes. And
so maybe there's something good to come.
Maybe.
Yeah. Hey, we need to go to gripes, but real quickly, I just want to ask you guys, is Huntsman in? John Huntsman Jr. in? What do you think, Josh?
I've never thought so, but I don't understand why there's so much speculation if it's not true. So I have no idea.
Everyone says in. I'm still saying out, and it's only because I don't think it makes any sense.
I'm with you.
He's got other opportunities,
nope,
and
he's
it's
in.
Someone else's turn.
He's in.
All right.
Not like toes in the water.
He's in.
He's in.
Wow.
Dan, we got a couple minutes left. Your gripe.
Okay, so my gripe is my co-host Natalie is terrible at receiving awards. And I just say that because she's awesome at it. She's awesome at deserving them. But then whenever she gets them, she humbly focuses on other people. And so it's one of the things we love about Natalie. And at the same time,
nice.
You know, anyways, it was great. It's just great to see her be honored in the community. So thanks for all you do, Natalie.
Yeah, you're so nice, Dan. Thank you. Josh.
Hey, I'll skip a gripe and I'll go to the opposite side and say, I just wish that the rest of politics in this country could take a lesson from how civil Luce and Aaron have been in the mayor's race. And it's a pleasure to see it.
You think we'll see that in the governor's race? Any chance of it? in the Utah governor's race?
I think some.
Because the stakes are going to get so high for people that you look at John Jr. or, you know, Ambassador Huntsman. That guy's not going to want to take a loss. And I think he'll take the political advice that he needs to win.
I don't see people like Huntsman or Spencer Cox getting the kind of aggressive rhetoric that other candidates.
Yeah, well, that would be a trademark for our state. Would be nice. My gripe concerns, and I've talked about this before, but I was on a housing panel today, so it's fresh in my mind. People that use the emergency room like it's a medical clinic. Mm. It raises the costs, and it drives me nuts that we haven't preserved emergency rooms for true emergencies and use these clinics for everything else.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, been with Josh Cantor and Dan McKay. The program is produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening.